Hello, welcome to another episode of Unfinished Business, the podcast that talks about business in the design area. I'm Richard Rutter, and with me is my co-host,
Andy Clark. How you doing?
Hello. Very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm vielen Dank. Good. I'm still in Germany. Actually, I won't speak German anymore because A, I'm rubbish at it, and also I don't want the transcription thing to then try and translate all of the rest of the podcast, which is what it did when I spoke bad French a few months ago. So we won't be doing that. But yeah, no, I'm doing fine, thanks. I'm doing fine. Escaping the British winter and having a German one, which is similar, except it's colder, but with more sausage.
Well, we all need more sausage.
Yeah, there's worse things that could happen.
Oh, very good.
There you go. Joining us.
There's always a good one. Oh, joining us.
Yes, on today's episode is our old mutual friend, Dave Latore. You're right, mate.
I'm very good.
So,
yes.
Are you in London at the moment?
I am in London. Yeah, that's where I live. And I also run London Web Standards. We call it London Web Standards because it's based in London. Not as somebody pointed out the other day, that we have our own web standards specifically for London.
What would they look like?
Well, yes, I am in London.
What would London specific
web standards look like?
What would they actually look like?
I would say they would look exactly the same, but spelled correctly.
Yes, there would be that. And also, there would be no divs. I would get rid of those straight away. Semantic all the way. But I'm just,
So for people that don't know you then, Dave, I mean, we know each other because we've done a podcast together many, many moons ago about music.
Yep.
Top tunes. And around about the same time, I spoke at your event, not London Web Standards, but I spoke at your State of the Browser conference. So you run this event. I think the next one is end of February, beginning of March, is that right?
Yeah, it's the 28th of February.
Right. And you've been running that event now for how many years?
So this is the 14th event.
About that.
Quite a while.
I always like to start these conversations with finding out a little bit more about you and your background and how you arrived where you are now, these dizzying heights of fame and fortune.
So I left school in 1985, not quite as old as some people on this podcast, but
actually,
yeah,
I
was
left
a while ago.
I left school in 84.
I finished my A-levels in 1987. There was no web in those days, and my dad had been a furniture maker. I followed in his footsteps, and I did a degree in furniture making. So I learned how to make things with my hands. I absolutely love that. When I retire and get a big shed, that's what I'll go back to, making furniture in some shed. At the moment, we're not quite there. After a while, I worked for a furniture maker near Scunthorpe, where I grew up, and I lost my job. And I went and did this course, which was learning how to become a carpenter and joiner. And the course was 6 months long, but because of my background, I learnt the whole course in 2 weeks. They wouldn't let me go. They said, we'll stop paying you if you leave, and the government will want money back from you. So I stayed, and what I did was I taught the other people on the course how to do the joinery and carpentry. And I absolutely loved that. So at the end, I decided that I was going to go into teaching. And I was a teacher for 14 years. I left teaching in 2005 because teachers and nurses in all countries around the world, the two professions that we need more of than anything else, are treated very badly. So I taught myself how to build websites.
One of
the ways that I did that was, it wasn't random. So what I've done in all of the time, if you look and follow through, I have been solving problems. So originally I was solving a problem. How do I make sure that somebody doesn't fall on the floor when they sit down? I made them chairs. And I made sure that those chairs were of a certain standard and they were strong enough to be able to support a human being. And then when I became a teacher, I was a woodwork teacher and I was teaching kids how to solve problems. It was called CDT in those days, craft design technology. But I taught kids woodwork mostly and a little bit of metalwork and things like that. So all of those things are just the same thing. I've been a designer of some description for nearly 40 years. And the web is what I'm doing. It's solving problems. That's all I'm doing. I'm solving problems. And that's what design is, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm sure that you would agree.
Primarily. Yes, primarily.
Yeah, we could. But so that's where I started. I got my first job. I was working at the web. I was working for a company called Total Jobs. And they sent out emails to everybody. And this was before iPhones. So people would go to a website on their desktop computer and sign up to get emails about jobs. So I spent 6 months writing HTML emails. And I still get scared of those today. I got an interview with a company called Squiz. And they're an Australian company that do content management for big education establishments in government. And that meant when I went in there and on the way out, they said, you used to be a teacher, right? So they got me to train all of their clients on how to use their software. And during that time, I started going to meetups. London Web Standards started in 2007. And in those days, it was just in a pub and people would go and talk about the new HTML5 that was coming out and new CSS3 that was coming out. And it was so hard to get tickets that I decided that I had to volunteer to be able to guarantee that I got a ticket every month because the people would set up reminders and all those kind of things and the tickets would disappear within 30 seconds. It was like 60 tickets gone in 30 seconds. So I became a volunteer and I've been doing that since 2008. I've been volunteering at State of Browser, London Web Standards and State of the Browser. We started State of the Browser in 2011. We'll talk about that later. But then during the pandemic, I got made furloughed and then I got made redundant. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I started my own business, which is where I'm at now. I've got a company called Code Red. I tried to get Red Hat because I like red and I like hats. But the marketing team at Red Hat said, no, you cannot buy our domain. But we'll send you some Red Hats if you want. So, yeah. And then a couple of years ago, I went to a conference called Pixel Pioneers in Bristol. Amazing event. Absolutely amazing. Oliver does a great job. I met Ruth. I'm sure you both know Ruth John. She works at Mozilla for MDN. She's done loads of speaking at our event. She's spoken at State of the Browser about web audio and using JavaScript to make music and those kind of things. And we sat in the pub afterwards and she said, Dave, I'm trying to hire somebody. And I said, I don't want a full-time job. And she does 2 days a week. So now I work 2 days a week. For Ruth and MDN. Well, I don't work for them, I contract them. So, which is amazing. And I went to visit Ruth last year, and it turns out that she got her job at MDN via going to State of the Browser and meeting Chris Mills, who said, Ruth, will you come and work at MDN? So, State of the Browser has helped many people get jobs, it turns out.
It's one of the great... Yeah, I've not seen Chris for a very long time. But that's one of the great things, I think, about events. It's not necessarily just about the content or the people on stage. It's those connections that get made. I can't say that I can put my finger on any particular job that I got based on meeting somebody at a conference. But I do know that I've got jobs from people, even sometimes years later, where they say, you know, yeah, I saw you speak at app media or state of the browser or whatever it was. So, yeah, I think that's one of the most sort of underestimated benefits of going to these things, particularly, as I suspect a lot of people are, in the job market.
Yeah, it certainly used to be really, really powerful for that, because people would come to meetups and say, we're hiring, and other people would be there, and then they'd start whole conversations. And you get a way better foot in the door by knowing somebody who works at a place rather than filling something in online on LinkedIn, I would say. And I'm sure that's the case for...
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you would think that an event like State of the Browser would be competing with, let's say, Web Day Out in terms of bums on seats or in terms of sponsorship money or whatever. But one of the things that struck me about being State of the Browser last year was just how much emphasis there was on sharing other events that were going on. I mean, I think it was every break or at the beginning of every session, you would say, hey, you know, here's a conference that's happening in Manchester or Bristol or wherever. That kind of thing I thought was, especially in relation to Web Day Out, for example.
Yeah, so Web Day Out is our conference. Very similar theme is like everything new that you can do in browsers at the moment. Less than 2 weeks after State of the Browser, geographically quite similar location, same audience, different day of the week, which I think is crucial. But I think a wonderful thing about our industry generally is that you don't look at that. At least I don't anyway, look at that and think, oh, that's competition. Think, okay, how can we pull together and make ourselves both successful? And that's why people who, particularly in our industry, who run conferences as well, we tend to try and club together. We have, you know, close relationships with people like Mark Thieler from Beyond Telerand. We don't compete with Mark, but very much, you know, he comes to our conferences. We've been to his conferences in Germany. He does a fantastic job. And that's one of the nice things that you feel you can just phone someone up or, you know, contact them and have a conversation. Like, how can we help each other rather than try to steal audience from each other as you might do in more conventional capitalist setting? But we've just gone into a partnership, if you like, State of the Browser and Web Day Out, and it's proving really good. We're persuading our respective audiences to go to the other conference as well, and tickets are being sold both ways because they're two really great conferences that people can go to both. But that's what I love about it. And when you've been around for a while and see those benefits, you just want everyone to benefit from all the opportunities that they can do. So, yeah. Always grateful for that.
I see it as the most important thing of any conference is the community. And that community is very special to me. I've made so many friends through doing this, and I can just ask people for help. I've got no problem now just sending a message. The other day I sent a message to Brahmas, and you both know who Brahmas is. I think he's talking at your event, isn't he? Well, he's speaking at our event. No. Brahmas is speaking in other events that are happening. But I can do that to anybody, and that happens all the time. And our community is not just meeting up in... I go for a dog walk regularly with Cassie. I just said on social media, let's go for a dog walk on this day. And Richard jumped in and brought his dog for a walk as well. And Jeremy jumped in and gatecrashed that as well. It's the friends that I've made through these events and the community that we generate, which is why I think it's so important to spread and share the joy. We started 2 years ago pairing a conference with a speaker, and that's based off the back of Phil's idea of pairing speakers or talks with biscuits. So I thought it'd be a better way of promoting other people's conferences.
Phil Hawksworth.
Yeah, it is Phil Hawksworth. Yeah.
Would you be a jammy dodger?
Maybe. I don't really like biscuits, to be honest.
Not my favourite.
Yeah. But it would definitely have to be a biscuit and not a cookie. Cookies are not for me. Them soft things.
So I think that, conferences have changed a lot. I mean, I think the first one that Rich and I did, in fact, did you speak at the first App Media, Rich? I can't remember now.
I didn't speak. I remember it well, though. I remember being in an audience.
So, you know, that was 20 plus years ago, incredibly. Things in the industry have changed a lot along the way. Things have certainly changed in the conference arena. They were changing before the pandemic, but certainly during and post-pandemic, things are radically, radically different. So how do you keep going? What are the biggest challenges for running an event now versus when they were in their heyday?
The tricky thing, I love it so much. I love being in a room with all of those people. And I can tell you, in 3 weeks' time, I'm going to say, I'm never doing this again. But then, in 5 weeks' time, I'm going to go, I can't wait until the next one. So, it is hard. And most of the events that I go to are not events that are trying to make money. There are a couple that obviously have to pay the people that are running them. But I know that Pixel Pioneers, they're not doing it to make money. They're doing it to get the community together. And so there's a different type of conference. And last year I went to CityJS, mostly because one of my friends was giving a talk there and I wanted to support them. But their tickets were £800. And it's just mind-blowing that they get so many people. And they get I don't know why it is that they can sell so many tickets. Maybe it's because people will go and say, well, this is £800, so that's quite a lot of budget, and it's obviously going to be very, very good. Yeah. And we don't do it that way. We do it the opposite way, because some people can't afford those events. I don't know what the solution is. All I can say is I just keep going.
From Claire Leff's perspective, we have panel conferences, two ends of the spectrum from a sort of price point of view. We have our Leading Design, which is a two-day one in London aimed at design leaders. And nowadays, it's probably our most successful conference. We also have UX London, which is at UX practitioners. And that's relatively, you know, a reasonable price point there. But we pay all our presenters and then the people to actually run the workshops and things like that. So it comes with quite a lot of costs to cover. But then something like Web Day Out, although there is it's not super cheap, but it is a conference that we run mostly because we want to put it on. You know, we want to have a conference which has those speakers out. We know how to run a conference, especially when we started Clear Left 20 years ago. In that very first year, we ran the first Deconstruct. So we know how to do these things. And can spin up a conference that we want to go to. That's kind of the motivation, and we have to charge a little bit more because we have a team. We do have to pay, but aside from that, we try to make it as accessible as we can price-wise. And the motivation is financial there, but it's hard work trying to put something like that on to break even. Why go through the effort is because it's great on the day, and it's just fantastic putting together the speakers that you want to talk and you want to go and see. That's where the joy is, and seeing up the rest of that audience being there and having a great day together, enjoying. I mean, that's why State of the Browser is such a great conference as well.
It must be. No, carry on, Dave.
Definitely the motivation is to make it affordable for people that can't attend normally. So that's the main reason that we put it on the Saturday. In the early days, I would go to my boss and say, I really want to go to this conference. So we go, well, we're not paying for it. And I said, well, will you give me a day off? No, you'll have to take holiday for that. So, and I wasn't the only person that was happening to. So making it onto a Saturday has two amazing effects. It means that people don't have to take a day off. But also, venues are way cheaper on a Saturday than they are during the week. Mind-blowingly so. It's like 10 grand less. For the venue, because that's nobody wants to do work things at the weekend. And I don't see it as a work thing that what we're doing. We also support students and new people into the industry, and anybody who doesn't have a wage or feels excluded from our industry. We give away so many free tickets. We've given away about 60 this year. Most of those are online. Most of those are in person, but we'll give away anybody who can't afford a ticket, we'll give them one. until we've run out of them. We ask our attendees to help out with that because the price of our event is not very much. You know, at the moment, the tickets are £80. We're going to put them up if they don't sell out just for the last 2 weeks because I don't want to have to deal with getting their lanyards printed 2 days before because it's just a nightmare. Mm. But we ask them, if you want to buy a ticket for somebody who can't afford it, you can do that as well. So we have many different types of tickets that you can buy.
So let's talk about the financials then, because conversation with another organizer last week, who I bumped into over down here in Mainz, and he runs an event and was telling me about the how much more difficult it was to be putting on those events because venues, particularly in major cities, are ridiculously expensive. And with all of the other kind of associated costs that go with it, ticket sales themselves don't really scratch the surface. So relying on support from sponsors or other partners has been the only way really that these things can work. There's less of that available, and companies that have in the past supported a kind of a whole variety of different events and now just looking at a handful. So has that affected either of you in terms of the logistics of putting this thing on?
I mean, from our point of view, when we were working out the financials, we did include some sponsorship, but we weren't expecting loads because sponsors like to talk to design leaders because they see them as being the decision makers and who might have the budgets. Once it gets down to conferences for the practitioners, they generally seem to be a little bit less interested. The same to some degree goes for UX London, but for something like WebDIAL, less so. We have a slightly different model. We have some more costs to pay for it. We run it during the week, although we're at a really nice venue in Brighton. Because it's in Brighton, it's not hugely expensive. But then we always pay our speakers as well. That's just the nature of running our conferences. In reflection of the fact that it is a commercial undertaking, so we feel that it's only fair to pay people for their time. Now, I've spoken at State of the Browser. I wasn't paid for that. I paid for my travel, I think, and given a ticket for the conference. I'm quite happy as a speaker to talk at a conference like that without being paid because I see the price point and I understand the whole community aspect of it. It's a different kind of a deal. But as soon as I see a price point where, okay, you are a commercial entity here, so I'm not going to give you my time for free. So speaking from a speaker point of view, there is a difference. Commercials are quite tight when on something like Web Day Out, where we've only got an audience of between 150 and 200 at capacity. So it's not exactly going to be a massive money spinner. We just want to cover our costs, including the staff who are making it happen, like Louise back at base.
So, yeah. We've changed very much where we get our money from over the years. When we first started, State of the Browser was basically a browser fight. We invited all of the browser vendors to come to town and say, show us your wares. And at the end of the day, we would have a panel discussing which browser might be the best. But things have changed and we've got very few browsers nowadays. They're all the same engine, effectively. So those things are changing, but they're not changing on the platforms. That's the problem, because Android is still going to give you a Chromium-based browser and a Mac is going to give you Safari. And most people don't know what a browser is. If you talk to people in the real world about a browser, they don't know. They think it's called Google and not a browser. They will never change what they're given as their default. What we've done over the years is we've changed the way that we ask for sponsorship. We now ask for sponsorship on a much smaller basis. If you look at our supporters page, we've got loads of them, but they're giving us very small amounts of money. We do get some money from Paul Kinlan from Google, and he gives us a big chunk that gives us a big deposit to pay for the venue, which is amazing. And Paul will always support us because he knows what we're trying to do for the community and for the industry. If you look at our page, we've got people that just want to pay more than £60-70 for their ticket. So we've got a group of people, we call them awesome people, that have given us £300 for a ticket instead, which is, to them, there's value in that. And then we've got a small sponsor supporters package, which allows really small individual companies or people to help get their name on the front of our videos and things like that and at the event. So we've got small companies that we're targeting. And from that, we've got most of our sponsorship from those small companies and individual people, which is amazing. And that's we've done that because we would have to get three or four really big companies to give us a big chunk of money. And asking 20 individuals for a small amount of money is way easier to do that. Most of them, if you look at them, so most of them are all speakers. They've come to our event and gone, love that event. I'm going to give you some money for it.
Well, I remember last year, I think it was Set Studio was one of your second or third tier things. I remember their logo on the sheet, and I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Andy, he's always supported us. Since he found out about us in 2018, he's always helped us out in some way. So that's really good. But yeah, at the end of the social last year, two speakers came up and said, I want to support in some way your event. So if you look, Manuel is on the list of supporters, and Sarah Joy is also on the list of supporters as well. And it's because they believe in what we're doing. And we didn't, like Richard says, they pay their speakers. And I totally understand that. We don't, but we are very upfront about that. We say to our speakers, we don't pay because this is what we're trying to do. And if you look, and there will be 60 people in the room that didn't pay to go to our event. It's building the community is very important to me. It really is. That's the main reason I do it. I'd rather just invite all of those people to London for the weekend and we just sit in the pub and chat all day. But that wouldn't happen. So we've got to get some speakers for them to come and look at as well. So,
yeah. And you do get good speakers for sure.
We've got a queue. I've got all the speakers for next year already, provided that they can do the date that we've got, which is mental. It really is. And you've spoken before.
That is true.
Something mad has to happen for us to. But we also have backup speakers as well, because a few years ago, I had to phone up Andy Bell on his holiday and say, I need you to come to London on Saturday to give a talk because Jake pulled out because of COVID. So since that day, we always have a backup speaker and we have a backup Dave as well, because I compare the conference. So I don't want the other organisers, because they're all quite shy, I don't want them to stand up and for that whole room, because it's terrifying to do that. So we have a backup compare as well.
Yeah, we do the same. You've got to have that contingency because it's going to go wrong. We've had speakers pull out at the last minute for unavoidable reasons. We haven't lost a compare as yet. I don't think so. But we do cover that eventuality as well. Because I think it's nearly happened in the past. Another part of the unseen part of it, of the conference organising.
I very, very nearly had to pull out of, I think it was a smashing conference in New York, literally on the day that there was like, are you sure you can do this? Because I literally lost my voice the night before. But no, you know, I soldiered.
Yeah, we do have, even if we didn't have a backup speaker, there are people that are attending the event I could turn to every year and I could say, I need your help. I need you to give a talk now. And I know that there are certain people in that room that would do that for me, because they may say that they hate me, but.
But that is
the day. Thinking back to what you were saying with your current job at MDN. I'm just wondering, is that a teaching kind of role that you do there of some sort? Or what's your
role? It pretty much is. I'm writing documentation, which is where people go to get knowledge. How does this CSS property work? Yeah. So effectively, I am still teaching. Yeah.
Kind of a technical writer.
Yes.
Of sorts.
Yeah, I think technical writer is probably the correct phrase.
Yeah. But yeah, I figured that's probably what it was. And when you're writing like that, we've all written articles and books for the same audience. I really enjoy it. It's quite a rewarding challenge. First of all, you have to understand everything inside out if you're going to explain it to anybody, which is quite good in itself. But then to work out, okay, what have I understood? How can I go through this and try and make it clear to someone who's coming across this for the first time? I find it a really rewarding challenge.
One of the things that happened, I went to a conference many years ago. It was called The Web Is, run by Craig in Wales.
Yes, I think I spoke
at
that. And
I met Andy.
Yes.
You did. And Andy Davis also spoke there. And he said to me, Dave, I need you to look after my daughter because I'm going to the speech meal. And it was all like, what are you doing? This is not... So anyway, afterwards, I was talking with you, Andy, about this. I was with my friend Callum. Callum is very shy, but wonderful human being. He runs Homebrew Web Cup in London. But we were talking about why should people give a talk when somebody more senior or more known or famous has already given the same talk. Your point of view is always important because I may not have thought of something that your experience has shown you, for example. Callum was thinking about giving a talk and it was already loads of talks about this subject that somebody else has already given. But your perspective on that subject is always valuable and it will make somebody think in a different way about that.
Well, I've had this...
You can't remember that. Well,
I would never forget a conversation with you. A similar topic to, I was talking to Jeff Graham, who is the editor of Smashing and runs CSS Tricks these days. And we were talking about me writing for them, which I've done for the past year or so. And I was in a similar situation to Callum at that point, because you've got people that have Jeff himself or Chris Coyer or all of the great contributors that are on CSS Tricks, you know. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer when it comes to CSS anymore. There are people out there, Anna Tudor and lots of others, Cassie you mentioned, who do incredible things with CSS and some of the maths and some of the other stuff, trigonometry or whatever the hell it is in CSS these days. Could not stand up and do a talk about that, and I couldn't write an article about that. What Jeff said to me was, you know, your perspective on it and your application of it and the things that you learn along the way are as important as the technical documentation. You know, if you're going to want to go and look up a property, then you'll go and look up a property, but that's not going to tell you, you know, hey, I want to make animated cowboys, which is what I've been doing. So, yeah, no, I think it's right. And I would always encourage people to continue to, you know, write on blogs or send in article submissions to CSS Tricks or Smashing to apply to speak at conferences or go to conferences and, you know, speak to the organizer and say, you know, hey, you know, this is my passion. You know, this is CSS SVG animations is what I'm spending all my time geeking over. So, you know, is there any way that I can, you know, come and do a talk, even if it's like a, you know, a small one? Or to give a talk at a local meetup. Remember Milton Keynes Geek Night back in the day?
Yeah.
So all of those things I think are really still very, very important. But I do think that the landscape for speakers has changed again over the last kind of 10 years or so, because, you know, Rich and I and Jeremy and Andy and, you know, all of those people that grew up in the 2000s, you know, we were all tarred at one point with the whole kind of, like, you know, web celeb brush, because it was a similar, smaller group of people that were, you know, standing up and doing this kind of stuff. But when I look at the lineups from State of the Browser, I might recognize one out of six. If I look at Web Day Out, it might be the same. I'm speaking myself, actually, up at Dibby in Edinburgh. I know nobody else on. I'm speaking in Berlin later on in the year. I know nobody on that lineup, and that's a good thing.
It is. It's one of the things that we've done for a long time. We always try and have a new speaker, and we've got somebody who's giving their very first talk at Standard Browsing, and we partner them with a speaker mentor as well, so they don't have to just come in and we give them no help. We partner them with a speaker mentor because it's very important to understand, how do I go about writing my slides? And then there's somebody to have a look over those slides and things like that. And last year we had a young lady called Nia, and she's now helping out as an organizer of Standard Browser and London Web Standards, which is amazing, believe me, because my social media skills are no good. I don't want to be posting on social media at all if I can get away with it. So having somebody do that kind of stuff, and just, we had a meeting last night, and the work that she's taken off my shoulders is amazing. Some of the most famous speakers in the world gave their first ever talk at one of our events. I know that Leonie gave her very first talk at a London Web Standards event. I'll never forget that day. It was brilliant. There's loads of people that are giving their first talks at our events as well. And we will always continue to do that. Championing new people is very important.
I think it's important for any conference organizer to be doing that, to be having visible representation on the lineups as well. It is really important too. But yeah, we've always tried to give some new speakers a chance. You balance that obviously against people that are going to be a draw as well. And they're going to be a draw because they're good and you want to hear from them, but you do want to hear from new upcoming voices as well, not just to encourage new people to the industry, but also because there's new voices, new perspectives, new backgrounds and everything that just helps. Just give that wider perspective to the whole day, to the whole industry, really. I think we're as conference organizers, in a relatively new, unique position to do that, to elevate people and give them the opportunity, but then to show the rest of the industry that there's lots of different kinds of people who work in what we do. And I think that's really a really important part of what we're able to do. We've got our minds to it. It's easy to have a lineup full of white middle-aged blokes, but it's nowhere near as interesting.
Yeah, but do I not count as a diversity speaker now that I've hit 60?
Because you're old.
Yes.
I'm almost there as well, so yeah. Oh, yeah, but we've had you before, so...
Yes, I know. I know. I'm not riding on you. No, I would just say one more time that I got my first speaking gig because Patrick Griffiths invited me, along with a bunch of other people, to that first At Media. But I would not have had that. He would not have known who I was had I not been blogging about the stuff that I was doing. And, you know, I look back at some of those early blog entries and, you know, 90% of them, 90+% of them were complete and utter bollocks. And yet, you know, you put your kind of your perspective out there. So, I mean, the big thing I think still is to blog about stuff, you know, don't just rely on social media, but actually do. And I really, really hope that, you know, this coming year and whatever, we get back to that sharing of stuff on personal spaces.
I agree. Do you know about Henry Coates?
No,
I can't pronounce his surname. But he's taken over the website called Personal Sites of Andy Bell. Yeah. And it's a way that you can it's just a collection of people's personal websites. We also do that at State of the Browser. We have a channel on Discord where people can share their personal websites. And some of the stuff you see in there is amazing. And I would always recommend that. And also the same with people speaking for the first time. Nowadays, with the job market being in the fluctuation and nonsense that it is, it's a way that when you're being interviewed, you can stand out. You can say, "But did you see my talk at State of the Browser? Did you read my blog post I wrote about this CSS thing?" Or rather than, "Can you tell me about what this CSS thing does?" And it's like, Well, yeah, I can, because I wrote a whole post or I gave a talk about that. It makes you stand out from the rest of the people who are applying for the second job, because the job market is not what it used to be 20 years ago.
Well, it's a good job that the three of us are very close to retirement then, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am almost retired.
So you're doing 2 days
a week.
I can draw
my pension next year.
Oh. So you're doing 2 days a week for Mozilla, and the rest of the time you're doing events. So obviously, you know, you're winding down. Where are you going to be when you hit retirement age? Are you still going to be doing the same thing, or are you? At what point do you go back to furniture making?
So I'm still going to be doing stuff, because I've realized keeping your brain active is very, very important. Last year, my mum was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it's because partly it's due to not using your brain as much as you used to when you were younger. I'm not a doctor and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not saying that that is what causes people to get Alzheimer's, but there is a factor. Certainly. I know that when my mum was busy all of the time doing things, rather than just sitting in the room watching the same old telly all of the time, things started to deteriorate much quicker. So being active, I'm always going to go to events because I just love being in that community. So the garden I've got in London is not big enough for a big shed. That's the issue I've got.
Well, I hear property prices in Scunthorpe are much more reasonable.
Yeah. And maybe the political background in Scunthorpe is not what it used to be either. So it used to be a very union-based place, but a certain lady in the 80s closed all of the steelworks. So there's no unions there anymore. So people have got different ideas of their politics.
That might be a good place to visit. Very diplomatic. Yeah. That might be a good place to wrap it up. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sorry that I won't be able to hop back to State of the Browser, and I'm not going to be a web day out this year.
Well, it does appear online as well, and tickets online are only £20.
Then that's what I shall be spending. I shall be spending my day doing. Up until the point that the Wrexham game comes on, and then no speaker's going to get in the way of that. Not even Andy
Bell. Glory hunting football.
All right, let's wrap it there. Thanks, Dave. I've really enjoyed seeing
you
again.
Thank you very much.
So,
cool.
Thanks very much for joining us on this episode of Unfinished Business. We will see you on the next one. Cheers, guys.